ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Why do humans hold on to stuff? Oddments we don't use, and yet can't quite throw out. It's not just you and me. Australia's oldest library is crammed with stuff that isn't books. Terrible paintings, old menus, human hair. Is this history or hoarding? I'm Annabelle Crabb. Come and have a rummage through the story of us told by our stuff. Search for the History or Hoarding podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the government has been getting its ducks in a row with just over 2 weeks left until it hands down a critical budget. It's unveiled big changes to the NDIS to rein in the cost of that scheme. There will be tax changes we're expecting on capital gains and negative gearing coming in the budget. But this is all happening against the backdrop of a still deeply uncertain situation in the Middle East. Donald Trump has extended the ceasefire. But what does that really mean? We're not seeing the ship traffic of oil continue restored through the Strait of Hormuz. Iran and the US continue to seize and board ships, make threats against each other. It's very difficult to know what's going to happen, let alone where we are at right now in this war. Is there a way to end this? What might that look like? Well, John Bolton was Donald Trump's national security advisor during his first term of office, before they later fell out. He was US ambassador to the United Nations under the previous George W. Bush presidency and is a well-known defence and security hawk who for years raised concerns about Iran and even advocated military intervention to stop its nuclear ambitions. What does he suggest now? I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Ambassador John Bolton, welcome and thanks so much for talking to us.
Glad to be with you.
So I'd like to start with your thoughts on where things are at with this war before we get to questions of how this might end and where it leaves the US relationship with countries like Australia and its other allies. Donald Trump has extended the ceasefire, but we are in a strange situation where it's pretty unclear whether there will be further peace talks and when they might happen. The strait remains shut. Who knows what's happening with the enriched uranium in Iran? How would you describe where we're at?
Well, it's a good question. I'm not sure Donald Trump knows where he's at because I'm not sure he knows what his objectives were going in. I thought at the beginning there was some chance he was going to seek regime change, but it doesn't seem like he's really willing to carry through with that. I think that's the only long-term answer to the threat that Iran poses is to change the regime and get people in charge, hopefully democratically elected, that don't have the ambitions to have nuclear weapons or support international terrorism that the current regime does. Trump has said, in fact, he has changed the regime, but I don't think anybody serious believes that. It's the same ideology. The faces may be different, but the Revolutionary Guard generals and others that he's talking to are basically just a younger generation, some of the older generation, too, of the people who were running the country when this started. So, you know, the old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will do. And I think that's part of the current problem. I do think Trump wants this over with. But if he leaves it in the current condition with the deal that has any reflection of all of Barack Obama's 2015 nuclear deal, which was very bad from the U.S. point of view, I think it will leave Trump in a very bad position in domestic political terms. So he's in a bad place, and because he doesn't think strategically, he's really at a loss as to what to do next.
So, I mean, you have long argued about the priority of dealing with this regime in Iran. If you're still saying, though, that regime change needs to happen, given what's happened over the course of this war hasn't achieved that, what would that realistically take now?
Well, remember, this regime has been in power for 47 years. We've had 8 weeks of an air campaign, six really because of the couple of weeks for the ceasefire. I think Trump failed to do a lot of things that he needed to do if it were a serious regime change effort, things that should have been done before the hostilities started. But he still has time to do them. And the most important thing is to work with the people of Iran, the opponents of the regime, to see how we could help better their organization, how we could supply more resources, whether it's cash or telecommunications equipment or weapons or whatever it might be, and how we help continue fracturing the regime at the top, which is what I think our military attacks and the elimination of large chunks of the top leadership have begun to do. That's how the military strikes relate to the regime change internally, is as the top of the regime either disappears begins to split with other people in the regime, you get the possibility for the regime to collapse internally. And I think you can see in just the past few days the inability of different factions of the Revolutionary Guard or Ayatollahs or civilian government, whatever they may be, are not exactly working in good order here. That's evidence that the regime has been damaged, at least somewhat at the top, I think probably pretty extensively, and we need more of that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt to those of us watching from the outside, there's confusion over who's calling the shots. But do you really think there are opposition forces that can be helped to topple this regime? And are you saying this can be done without the need for ground forces?
Well, I think it has to be done without ground forces because Trump isn't going to commit them in any substantial number. Whether that's good, bad, or indifferent really doesn't matter because I take it as a given. But bear in mind, the regime is more unpopular now than it has been at any time since it took power back in 1979. The economy is in terrible shape, and the people know it. That's what has been the cause of countrywide demonstrations every year since 2018, and including as recently as December and January, which were put down by brutal repression from the Revolutionary Guard, killing upwards of 40,000 people. I mean, just machine gunning them in the streets. That's how bad it was. So the economy hasn't gotten any better after 6 weeks of pounding by the United States and Israel, that's for sure. The young people, two-thirds of the population are under 30. They don't like the regime. They know they could have a different life. They can see it on their computers when the computers work and across the Gulf. Women, ever since the murder over 3 years ago now of Mahsa Amini, the young Kurdish woman who refused to wear the hijab, the word of the Ayatollahs, which comes directly from God, at least that's what they say. And that opposition from the female side of the population has not diminished in the past 3.5 years. And then on top of that, you've got enormous ethnic dissatisfaction, the Kurds, the Baluchis, the Azeris, Arabs, populations that really don't like the regime at all. When you put all that together, as I say, the discontent is very widespread. It needs better organization. There's no doubt about it, which I think the U.S. and others could help contribute to. And that is work that needs to be done. But as the regime begins to fracture, a lot of people nominally part of the regime, but in the regular military, for example, not the Revolutionary Guard, but the more conventional armed forces, would begin to say, you know, this ship is going down and I don't want to go down with it. That's the people the opposition wants to work with.
I mean, when you lay out all those different groups, that does sound like a lengthy process. This is not something that's going to happen in a week or two. Honestly, do you think Donald Trump is up for anything like that, continuing this, fostering that resistance and staying the course until the regime is gone?
Well, he has a short attention span, so that's a problem. But I think he, as I say, he understands he can't make a bad deal here, or it will have worse political consequences for him at home. So in the near term, I think focusing on keeping the blockade against shipments to and from Iranian ports in place is very important. And I think also militarily taking control of the Gulf and making it possible for maritime traffic, especially tankers, obviously filled with Gulf Arab oil, to get out of the Strait of Hormuz and get into global markets. If you can,
I mean, why hasn't that happened? How difficult is that element? Because yes, those of us paying higher fuel prices around the world would love to see that oil start to flow.
Well, I'm surprised that we didn't focus on this more before. I'm sure the Pentagon knew this threat was out there. Trump said a few weeks into the campaign he was surprised that Iran was trying to close the Strait of Hormuz. It's impossible for me to believe he wasn't told that precisely that was going to happen. But in any event, I don't think the danger is really mines. I think there's some that you obviously have to be very careful and deal with them. But it's more the threat of anti-ship missiles sold to Iran by China and swarms of fast boats and drones, aerial drones, that can put the tankers in danger. Now, today, Trump has said, go after all the fast boats. I'd like to know why that didn't happen earlier, but better late than never. And likewise, going after drone production capabilities and storage sites, arsenals, to reduce the total number they've got. I mean, one thing that's fantastic about this war is just how many weapons and weapon systems the Revolutionary Guard and the Ayatollahs had put together. The population's economic situation is grave, but the state itself has more weapons than anybody estimated. So it's going to take longer to destroy them, but better that they're destroyed than that the regime survive.
Well, just coming back to the question of how long we can expect this to go, if the course you're laying out were to be followed, deal with opening the strait, try and foster real regime change in Iran, what's the likelihood here? How long should this take?
Well, Trump says he doesn't have an ending deadline, and I think if Iran were squeezed economically, as I'm suggesting, and the bulk of the rest of Gulf oil production was getting out into global markets, I think oil prices would come down. I think the economic effect would disappear, and it would be the regime in Iran that was suffering the most. I think this is doable. I would have done a lot of things differently before Trump did in opening the attack and convincing the American people of this, briefing our allies and so on. But it's still not impossible if that's what he's determined to do. I think one of his problems is he doesn't know what he wants.
Where does this leave the U.S. right now in terms of its global leadership, its position of strategic strength? A lot's been written about how this has really weakened the U.S., only helped Russia and China. How do you view that?
Well, you know, if the regime falls, the regimes that will be weakened further are Russia and China. They need Iran as their surrogate proxy in the Middle East. And I think, you know, there aren't any Western reporters roaming around Iran to see the damage we've done. They're all in Dubai and Qatar and Tel Aviv. So every Iranian rocket that hits breaks a window gets reported. But the ratio of the tonnage of bombs and weapons that have been dropped on Iran far exceeds the tonnage that have landed anywhere outside of Iran.
So, but on the question of U.S. strategic strength and global leadership, has this been weakened? Do you fear where this has left the standing of the United States?
No, I think it's weakened Trump's personal standing because people can see that he didn't have a full plan here, that he's at sea right now, exactly what to do. But in terms of the effect of U.S. military force, believe me, in the capitals where it matters, in Moscow and Beijing, they've paid very close attention to it.
But on the flip side, has it exposed where the U.S. can be pressured, and that is economically, by choking off the Strait of Hormuz?
Look, there's not a navy in the world that can't tell you the five most important choke points in terms of international waterways. You've got one close to you in the Strait of Malacca. Everybody knows about them, and this was entirely foreseeable. So I think the Pentagon knows how to deal with this. Why they didn't do it earlier, as I've said before, I don't know, but I think they are going to do it now.
Just on alliances, you mentioned you think Trump should have done more to consult allies. Instead, we've seen him berate allies, NATO allies, Australia as well, for not helping. Certainly the Australian government makes the point where there was no specific request for help, but we have offered a surveillance plane that's helping defend the UAE. What's going on with US alliances right now? Should we read a lot into what we're hearing from the president, or is this just Trump talk that we should ignore? How do you interpret it?
Well, I think Trump made a clear mistake in not consulting allies all around the world about the need ultimately for some kind of regime change in Iran. But I think it's important that people understand when Trump belittles alliances and our friends around the world, when he imposes tariffs as he's done, these are steps that I don't think American public opinion shares. I think the polls show that. And Trump's doing a lot of damage to our alliances, but hopefully it's damage that will be repaired when he leaves office. We are stronger with allies. Allies are clearly stronger with us. Bear in mind, the Soviet Union wanted to break the NATO alliance during the Cold War. And one of the reasons they lost the Cold War, among many, is they failed to do that. So looking at it today, we should not be doing Russia or China's work for them. That's for sure.
I mean, you mentioned polls. We're seeing it here in Australia, and this won't surprise you, that while the government's holding the line about we've got to stick with this alliance, it's so fundamental to our national security, the people are getting worried about it under Trump. I mean, does that concern you?
Sure, but remember, Trump's got less than 3 years to go. How much time is there after he leaves office? Infinity.
Do you worry about the next 3 years, though? If we've already seen in such a short time this sort of activity, what more can we expect for the remainder of this term?
Well, I think things could change after the November elections. If Republicans lose control of the House and the Senate, which is entirely possible. But the main thing is to keep in mind what the fundamental underlying commonality of interest is, let's say, between Australia and the United States, and look at Trump as a temporary phenomenon.
All right. Well, John Bolton, a voice of reassurance on that front. We really appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Well, we will see where things are at by Sunday morning. We'll have more on this as well as the big political developments of the week, including those changes on the NDIS. The opposition leader, Angus Taylor, will be our guest Sunday morning for Insiders on ABC TV.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.